Okay, hello guys, and welcome back to BC is Creepy.
Were you about to say spooky spaces and haunted places?
I was. I'm a little out of practice.
Yeah, I can see that. You're saying that a lot more than BC is Creepy.
Yeah, I was just, well, I'm not here to plug that. I'm not going to plug that. But
until the end.
Until the end. So, episode 2 of our second season. This is really fun. I'm Topher Graham.
I'm Ariel Hansen.
And today, we're going to talk about haunted places.
Yes.
So, I've actually got a story here from Cologne, Germany.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm going to go first this time, since Ariel, you took the honors last time.
Yes.
And
yours is also probably a lot more exotic than mine.
It's a little bit exotic. It is called, oh no, I'm going to butcher this, Fuhlingen House.
How does it spelled?
F, it's the U with the, that looks like the happy face. With the two little bits over top of it.
The two dots?
Yeah. H-L-I-N-G-E-N. Fuhlingen. This is in the northern part of Cologne, a little bit by the river. House Fuhlingen was built in 1888 by Edward Baron of Oppenheim, and it was built with a stud and stables. He eventually purchased the area around it and naming the whole place Fuhlingen Moor.
Ooh.
Now, historically, this area was the place where the Battle of Waringen took place. So this was in the year 1288, and it cost thousands of people their lives, and it is said to have been, like, very bloody and mad. You know, as ancient, crazy, sword-fought battles would be.
Yeah.
What's said about this place is that the land is cursed, and basically all businesses on there are doomed to fail. And this was true of Edward, who found the land unsuitable for horse racing and had to sell it in 1907.
Yep.
Yeah. So I guess it's like really close to the river. And so some of it's like quite soft.
Oh, and I'm just picturing like horses running off and falling into the river and drowning and...
If it was a horror movie,
that would happen.
Yeah. I'm sure it wasn't that dramatic, but it just seemed to be like he couldn't build a proper track on this place. And so it wasn't a good investment. So later it became a gravel works. And they dug up what would today be Fuhlingen Lake. But again, this was proven to be a misinvestment, and they lost a lot of money.
Take that, capitalism.
Yeah. Boo. So we're getting, like, you know, we're getting closer to, like, the good bits here.
Yeah.
But essentially, we get to 1943, and the Fuhlingen House is now renamed as Villa Oppenheim.
Oh.
And this was a work camp.
What does the house look like?
So it's like two stories high. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it in pictures, and it's really hard to describe the kind of house, but it's very much like a farm house.
Yeah.
German style farmhouse.
Okay.
I imagine it's quite large compared to how it looks in pictures. Or at least the land is very large. Because we've got like a lake that's been dug up out of gravel. We've got, it was supposed to be like horse stables. And in 1943, it's a work camp for the Nazis.
Ah.
Yeah, so the house was the sleeping place for the slave labor. And we actually have an account of a 19-year-old Polish boy who was caught having an affair with the landowner's daughter. He's in trouble. Mm-hmm. So he was executed by hanging in a brickyard not far from the house. And it is said that he still wanders the ground looking for his beloved.
Oh.
Oh. I know.
Meanwhile, she probably got married off to someone with more money and lived a life.
Or just like forced into having a lot of kids.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
War. Well, anything could have happened, really.
She just had a bunch of boomers.
No. The worst. Actually, German boomers are probably awesome.
Yeah.
Like, Germany is this, like, beautiful, beautiful place now. Because they've, like, been through it. They've been, you know, they've seen, like, you know, they've been on the other side of everything, right?
Yeah.
So that. Now they're like really open and welcoming and chill, and like it's just a beautiful, like very progressive country now. At least that's what I found when I was in Berlin.
Okay.
I'm going to Cologne, and I expect it's been said that it, like Cologne is very like freeing and young, and they have a lot of immigrants, and they were one of the first places to like allow like a mass amount of immigrants.
Hmm. That would make for like an interesting place.
Yeah. I'm excited. Cool. I should let everybody know. I'm recording this before I go to Cologne. I'm going in 2 days and I'm talking about Cologne because I think it's a good, it just gives us a good variety. We're doing episodes about places where I'm visiting or have visited to give you guys variety.
Meanwhile, I'm stuck in BC.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's stuck. You still have, you can still move around. I imagine you're going to go to some film festivals.
That's the plan. Yeah. Hopefully.
Yeah. So now we get to 1962. And Gerard Van Kay, a former Nazi judge who worked in the district court, bought the house and lived there with his wife. And on New Year's Eve, he hung himself from the second floor. So leaving his wife as a widow, and she lived there alone until the year 2000.
Whoa.
So another tragedy.
Maybe it was the guilt over World War II if he was a Nazi judge?
Yeah, that could be it. It could also be haunted by the ghost of the Polish boy who was hung. And then he was like, oh,
Joy.
That guy, yeah. Because in 2007, a body was found there, assumed suicide.
Ah.
Now, rumors say that he was hung from the second floor as well, but I don't have anything to back that up. Now, researching this has also been a little bit dodgy. I'll get into that when we get to the sources. But yeah, we do have another suicide victim in 2007.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sounds like recent.
Recent. Even more recent, I have a story from 2016 where we have a couple of British urban explorers who broke into the house, and mm-hmm. they have a picture of the boiler that was covered in bloody handprints.
Oh.
I've seen this picture. It's pretty convincing.
Yeah.
It is, in fact, a boiler covered in bloody handprints.
How did it get those handprints?
Yeah. Well, the noteworthy thing here, and this came up in my research, is that Reddit fans pointed out the blood on the boiler would, with time, turn brown. So it's either fake, freshly deposited, or supernatural.
Ah. And what you do believe is up to you to decide. Dun, dun, dun.
Precisely. Just some little, like, ending tidbits. Mm-hmm. It also exists that there is the tombstone of a teacher situated behind the house in the forest area. But there was never a cemetery, and none of the courted owners or occupants of the house was a teacher, so nobody really knows where this tombstone came from, other than that it belonged to a teacher who must have liked bullying in the house. And also, people say that the grounds have a very oppressive feel. Any businesses on the grounds will fail, that they see the young executed Polish boy, and that it's a place that attracts suicides. So I think between like the battle, the war camp, execution, and two confirmed suicides, there's definitely reasons for this place to be haunted.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Lots of death.
Yeah.
And depression.
Yeah. And I mean, you're gonna, it's one of those things that I feel like negative things will leave like a negative energy, and it might not be like ghosts, but it could just be like a feeling that kind of permeates and stays.
Yeah.
In a place, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's mysteries.
Spooky.
So, my sources. The first was a website called Profiling the Unexplained, and this was an English one. I also had to translate a page called lost-place.org, and this had a really, like, kind of in-depth explanation about the house, and this was a person who recently visited the grounds and took pictures. So I had to translate that. I also got the story of the two urban explorers who saw the bloody handprints from the dailystar.co.uk. And on YouTube, there was a little like travel video of ghost hunters exploring the house.
Aww.
That one has like English subtitles. So like the real problem was there was like one English source for this story. And then from there, I had to find German sources and get them translated. So,
yeah,
a bit harder to research than BC
or the UK.
Yeah, but no, it was a real interesting. I love these places that have a lot of layers, like the island in Stanley Park. That was awesome, and I think Fullingen House was very much to that.
Well, we're about to go to, okay, so Vancouver Island in Victoria, there are two places that they call castles.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about one of them today. And, like, I guess they kind of look like castles, but compared to you being over in Europe, I don't know if they compare.
Victoria is still quite new for castles.
Yeah, and so the one I'm talking about today, it's pretty new. I'm just going to quickly send you some pictures of it so you can see what I'm talking about. So the castle that we are taking an adventure to is Hatley Castle.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yes, and you might also recognize it from some things, because a lot of stuff films there.
It looks so very familiar.
Yes, so it's located in Colwood, which is just outside of Victoria. It's on the way to Souk from Victoria, and in fact, Hatley Castle is on Souk Road. And So what you might recognize it from, I just grabbed a couple things, but the X-Men films, Deadpool.
Right.
Arrow. Smallville. Yeah. And then a really old horror, I think it's from the 70s, a horror film called The Changeling. They filmed some stuff inside.
Oh, cool.
And that might actually be one of the first films to shoot there.
The 70s.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So it was commissioned by James Dunsmuir, who is the son of the coal baron Robert Dunsmuir. So Robert Dunsmuir built Craig Derrick Castle, which is the other castle in Victoria that we'll probably talk about at some point. But this one was built by James, and it was completed in 1908. So, like I say, pretty new castle. It's like 112 years old.
Yeah. Dunsmuir, like the street in Vancouver.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, a lot of streets here are named after rich people from BC. It's just what happened.
We just really liked them.
Yeah. Or they just paid for their name to be on something. Who knows? So James and his wife Laura had 12 children, including one son who's called James Jr., and he died going to World War I on the Lusitania.
Oh,
so that's,
man.
That's a ship that went down in 1915, and it was shot by German submarines.
12 children.
Yeah.
My God. No wonder he needed the castle.
Who knows if all of them survived childhood, but...
But one of them went off to war, didn't make it back.
Didn't even make it to war.
Didn't even make it to war.
Yeah. So James Dunsmuir, he was premier of BC at one point, but there were some conflicts of interest because one of his various businesses that he owned was a railway company. And so he would, as premier, be like negotiating, I guess, with himself for rail contracts. And so people were like, that doesn't seem right. So he stepped down. And then later he actually became the lieutenant governor, which I suppose may have had more power back then. But nowadays, the lieutenant governor is really a figurehead position.
Yeah. So probably back then, you'd have a little bit of... A
little bit of power.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So he was very involved in politics. He had a lot of businesses. He was probably one of the wealthiest people on Vancouver Island. And so he decided, I'm going to buy this plot of land outside the city as like a country getaway, and I'm going to build my retirement home. So that is what he did. One thing that he is quoted as saying in his hiring of people to build this home was, money doesn't matter, just build what I want.
So, famous last words.
Yeah, so that is how we ended up with that lovely castle I sent you pictures of.
Yeah.
And so the exterior is built from sandstone that was harvested from Saturna and Valdez Islands, which I do believe we took a little trip to Valdez back in our earlier episodes.
Saturna sounds familiar too. Isn't that where the cult?
No, Valdez was the cult. Saturna is just where Colin and I went on vacation a few years ago.
Right.
Yeah. So
that can be a mini cult.
I mean, it is the least populated of the Southern Gulf Islands that, like, you can take a ferry to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we did stay on, like, almost a commune.
The cult of Ariel.
Actually, okay, it was really weird. So the girl, so like the people who live on this farm, they take turns doing jobs. So they take turns with who's running the bed and breakfast. So I guess the girl who like just recently had gotten the job of running the bed and breakfast. Her name was Ariel.
There it is.
It was really funny because, like, they had this little booklet of, like, all sorts of activities that you can do on our farm during your stay. And just ask your host to help you out with them. And I was looking through it and it's
They're like chores, right?
No, it was fun stuff. Fun to me. So one of them was, we can take you on a tour of the farm. And I was like, ooh. So next time I saw the host, I was like, hey, it says here that you can take us on a little tour of the farm. And she's like, it does? And so she, like, because I mean it was in there, she's like, okay. So she improvised a tour of this farm.
That's adorable though.
Yeah. Of course, only me goes, I wanna see the farm.
Well, farms are cool. You get like animals and plants and like my family, we're getting way off topic.
Yeah, yeah.
So sandstone.
Sandstone from those islands.
Yeah.
And then the interiors of the house had oak and rosewood paneled rooms, a baronial fireplace, whatever that means, I probably should look that up, teak floors, and the light fixtures around the house were specially made.
We're talking like late 1800s, early 1900s.
No, early 1900s. I believe the castle was completed within 18 months.
Yeah. But when we talk about light fixtures, are we talking like with electricity?
I think electricity, because electricity existed by then.
Yeah.
And he's one of the richest people on the island.
BC, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure they would have been like, let's do this electricity.
Let there be light.
Yes. So, because Colwood's like a ways from Victoria, and especially it's not like there were paved roads and cars all over the place back then. This property that he had was huge, and so there were a bunch of buildings that they built on the estate to provide for the castle's needs. Most of these have been demolished by now, but there was a refrigeration plant, cow stables, a slaughterhouse, and a smokehouse, three silos, which could each hold 100 tons, a reserve water tank that was to the south of Belmont Drive, and then there was an old stable near a bridge to the east of what are now fields. And they even built a Chinatown to accommodate the 80 to 120 gardeners.
Its own Chinatown in the house.
Apparently. Well, not in the house.
In
the grounds. Yeah. And so, like, this is how huge the grounds were. And now it's actually called, the grounds are all called Hatley Park, and it's a National Historic Site because it's so big. And they've actually, there used to be Victoria Garden Show that would get hosted there. So I remember going to that once or twice as a kid and then poking around the gardens while you're there. There's like a Japanese garden and all sorts of stuff.
Like, it's all so very opulent.
Yes. Yes. They wanted to show off their money. So after the house was finished, they moved in, and James retired in 1910. But then he died 10 years later, so he only got to live in the house for about 12 years. Then his wife died in 1937, so she lived there another 17 years. And one of his daughters that was living in the house with her died in 1938. So
we don't really have a legacy.
Well, there's 12 kids.
Oh, yeah.
But apparently, the 10 remaining children totally squandered the fortune.
Oh.
So the Dunsmuirs were no longer a rich family after that one generation. Like, apparently, even one of them spent a bunch of her money producing films to try and make herself a movie star, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
I feel you, yeah. Girl. In 1940, because, like, the kids couldn't upkeep it, the caretaker was looking after the grounds, but the kids were, like, not able to afford this, and they were kind of desperate. They sold the property and the building to the federal government, and it became a Navy training school, which, a fun fact, I do believe my grandfather actually taught there at one point.
Cool.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Bill Hansen.
Bill Hansen. You guys have a legacy of army work, eh?
Military, sort of. It's like it kind of gets a little diluted with each generation.
A little bit less.
Yeah, yeah. And so at this point, when it was turned into the training school, it became Royal Roads. So that's what everyone started calling it instead of Hatley Castle.
Yeah.
Which, if you look it up, that's one of the options you can look up to find information about it. So, at the outbreak of World War II, there was actually some contingency plans to move the royal family of England to Canada if Britain got invaded. So, they're like these options that they had for what would happen in the case of an invasion. One was the stately homes that they had in England. So, I guess just hoping that the invasion got thwarted.
Yeah.
But the other option was to send them to Victoria, and they would have probably resided either at Hatley Castle, most likely, since it was federal property at that point.
Yeah.
Or I'm sure there's other places they could have stayed as well, but that seems like it would probably be where they were going to stay, since that is the Wikipedia article I found this information in.
I mean, it's a couple years late, but we can always stick Harry in there.
Yeah, Harry and Meghan. Well, I mean, rumor has it that when they spent Christmas on Vancouver Island, they were looking for a house. So that is the rumor. So then in 1995, with like negotiations between the BC government and the federal government, and just some plans were made, and instead of being a military college, the castle converted into Royal Roads University. So now it's a more traditional university, but it also, I do believe, does courses, a lot of courses for the military still. Like, it's not a military college, but people in the military will take courses there. And there's some sort of deal, I'm pretty sure.
I see. So now it's like a private
university. Yeah, I've got a friend who took courses there who is a civilian, so yeah.
I like it.
So now that we have a bit of the history of the castle and the grounds, let's get into the spooky.
Yeah.
So the very first ghost story is from 1915, and this was when the Lusitania went down, taking James Jr. with it.
World War One.
Yeah. In 1915, Dola Dunsmuir claimed to see an apparition of her brother who died on the Lusitania in the gardens, as if he was like saying goodbye to her.
Oh.
So that's like the first ghost story. And around that time, Laura Dunsmuir, the mother, also claimed to have had nightmares of him drowning and then waking up to the sound of a hand slapping on her window.
Oh, so he's like, nice to his sister and mean to his mom.
Yeah, or maybe, I mean, who knows? Maybe it's like just the energy you put out determines how you're going to be communicated with.
That makes sense, too.
Yeah. It was actually really funny. One of the things that I read was like, and there are people who say that Laura died of a broken heart at the loss of her son and the Lusitania. And I'm like, that broken heart took 22 years to manifest. She kept living. Usually died of a broken heart means like they died within 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. So take everything with a grain of salt, people.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to fast forward to its history as a military. Oh my gosh. Burpiness.
Oh man.
So now, after that, it's quiet for a while. And then the haunting stories started a bit more once it became a military college. So during that time, part of the castle was used as dorms for some of the students. And there were students, of course, living in James Jr.'s bedroom. So it's said that at night, the ghost of an old woman would lift up their sheets, stare at them, and then drag them onto the floor by their feet.
Oh, wow.
And then the students who lived in other rooms would feel cold hands on their shoulders during their late night cramming sessions.
Oh.
So a lot of people suspect that these ghostly encounters were that of Laura Dunsmuir, looking for her son and just telling the students, oh, just go to bed. Eight, you should be sleeping.
Just like a caring mother.
Yeah, although not so caring when she drags them out of the bed, realizing that they're not her son.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't belong there. Get out.
No. Get out! So, other people have claimed to see James Sr.'s ghost, but he tends to be just observing the visitors and not interacting at all, not making any noise or trying to communicate. Just watching. Always watching.
Just like done with it. Just chilling in the house. Kind of cursed to it because his whole family's there. He's like, ugh.
Yeah. Or maybe it's like TV for him. Oh, watching the new people. Watching all these students. Watching these military boys.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Fun that it's like the whole family is there.
Well, I don't think the whole family is there.
Well, no,
and there's also people who aren't a part of the family who are there.
Oh, more.
Because you got it. So apparently during one census, there was at least 100 people living on the grounds of this property. Because there was so much upkeep and so many people employed. Now, one of the people employed that is said to now be a spirit on the grounds is the personal maid of Laura. So Dunsmuir had a massive private yacht. Yeah. And so Laura would bring her maid with her when they went on the yacht and everything. And he employed a bunch of sailors, some of which were from the States. And this maid happened to have a tryst with one of these American sailors from Port Angeles.
I can see where this is going, and I don't like it.
Mm-hmm. So yes, this unfortunately led to her being with child and finding out that the sailor already had a wife when she told him she was pregnant. So then, because she was so full of shame, because back then she was now a pariah of society in their eyes, she committed suicide by jumping from the third floor of the castle.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So now she haunts the floor at the top of the main staircase and tends to show a dislike towards men. There are offices. Yeah. There are offices that reside on that floor, and the people who work in those offices, their bosses won't force them ever to work there by themselves because she'll just give them a lot of bad vibes and make them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also on that floor, some people have heard coughing and heels clicking along the floor, but when they look, no one's there. And windows near where she jumped will be found either opened or closed when they should be the opposite.
Cool.
Now, a couple recent sightings. In 2012, there was a very small article, not actually as much information in it as I hope, in the Goldstream Gazette, which is one of the local papers nearby there. Goldstream is in Langford, which is right next to Colwood. And it was all about a photo that someone took during a Colwood Heritage ghost tour. And they claimed that there was a ghost in the image. And I looked at the image, and there was a big red circle, and I really couldn't tell what they were circling. And that was the extent of the article.
That's useful.
Yeah.
When you get to the ghost stories, some of these things are really grasping at straws.
Yeah. So in the same year, CTV also did a story there, and they found orbs in the footage that they took inside the castle.
Now, you frequenters of BC is Creepy know exactly what we think of orbs.
Yeah. And
it's
so
dust.
Yeah. Apparently the camera guy was like, well, it's not lint or lens flares, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, but it could just be dust that was flying around in the air.
Yeah.
So that is pretty much the extent of the hauntings. What's really interesting is that there, aside from Dola seeing her brother in the gardens in 1915, there aren't really any stories of hauntings on the grounds. It's just inside the castle.
So, I mean, that's one of those, whenever you go on ghost tours in Victoria, they always say, you know, these places hold energy, and because we're surrounded by water, you know, we're the haunted, most haunted city in all of Canada.
And this property is on the water.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's Victoria. It's the most haunted city in Canada.
Yeah. So I thought I would end this on a really funny blurb from TripAdvisor.
Yes.
So the TripAdvisor page for Hatley Castle says, overview. And right under the overview, it says, and you thought your mother-in-law was bad? A mysterious old woman has been haunting this stately castle for years. That's the entire overview. And then I read the comments, like, or the recommendations. None of them talk about ghosts. It was the weirdest TripAdvisor article I'd ever seen.
You thought your mother was bad. Check out this guy's mother.
Yeah.
She'll drag you out of bed.
Yeah. So a couple other small connections. Back when it was still a military college, my dad actually got married there during his first marriage.
Yeah.
And then, so not my mom. And then I remember as a little kid, my mom actually got hired to do the decor for a wedding happening there. Which was definitely after it had become just a regular university.
But was it after your mom's marriage too?
Oh, of course, because my parents got married in the 80s.
Cool.
Yeah, so it was like especially weird my dad helping because he's like, I remember the last time I was here.
Just like, you know, hanging his head. Hiding the
something little awkward. But yeah, I've been there a few times, and I've only really seen the gardens, but they're really pretty. Apparently, you can book tours of the castle, but it has to be a group of a minimum of 10, which made me sad, because I want to go see it now and look for orbs.
I mean, there's still Craig Derrick Castle, right?
Yeah, I think they might have tours that are, you can just book or just show up, and there's specific times. Who knows? But anyways, that is Hatley Castle. So I had a few sources for this.
Yeah.
HatleyCastle.com and Victoria's Most Haunted by Ian Gibbs.
Nice.
One of the books my mom got me, or got us, from the Royal BC Museum gift shop. The Haunting of Vancouver Island by Shannon Sim.
Shannon Sim.
Yes.
Always pops up in these.
Yep. And again, this was from the Royal BC Museum. I keep wanting to say library, but it's a gift shop.
Yeah.
And then, of course, also Wikipedia was helpful. And then I did, I guess, kind of TripAdvisor in the Goldstream Gazette, but I didn't get a ton of information from them.
You got a nice little blurb. I think it's worth a shout out for TripAdvisor.
Yeah. So I didn't actually go on CTV's website and see this story. I actually read about the CTV story in the Shannon Sin book. So yeah, that is Hatley Castle.
Hatley Castle. Well, wicked.
Yeah.
Have we got any BC is creepy stuff to kind of push?
BC is creepy stuff
to push. No. Bad cookie pictures. No.
Yeah.
Bad cookie pictures.
I was going to say, we're in the episode. And
hey, guys, I guess you guys should listen to BC is creepy.
Yeah.
You have two hosts, and one of them is quite tired, and the other one is just waking up.
Yep. Woo! Woo! Well, Clout is coming along quite well. We're hoping to be starting our submissions in the spring for film festivals. So then in the summer, hopefully we'll be coming to a festival near you. And that's why Topher mentioned earlier that I might be traveling for film festivals.
Yes.
Fingers crossed.
Surely we can put that into the BC is Creepy podcast.
Yeah. Also, Women in Horror Month is either just started or about to start, depending on when this gets released. And so we're going to try and promote some women in horror on our social medias. And we also have an episode of Your Creepiest Corner coming out soon.
I believe we had one earlier this month.
Yep. Yeah, but we just recorded one a couple days ago, so that'll be coming up soon because I'm going to actually edit it quickly instead of waiting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last week I released my Prague episode of Spooky Spaces and Haunted Places. So that, if you haven't seen that yet, go to our YouTube page. We're still, that one's a really fun one.
Mm-hmm. Oh, also, we've got a new patron to shout out.
Yes.
So we want to give a big old thank you to our newest patron, Bren McDonald. Welcome to the Cookie Club.
Welcome to the Cookie Club. Yeah.
Never Bren called it that before.
Well, and Bren has been a collaborator with us before.
Yeah, he's an awesome photographer. So he's done stills photography on at least one of our projects.
I know he was there for
Ready to Burst.
Tricks. Ready to Burst. Oh.
Yeah, so I guess that's two projects. Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, Bren, for supporting the Patreon.
Yeah.
And again, if you guys support our Patreon, we'll be giving you shout-outs. We'll be giving you access to exclusive content. And it really helps us to create, like, a better quality in what we're doing.
Yes, it's already helped to, well, it keeps our website, this podcast, and some other things alive. So that's a good start. And it's also helped a bit with clout, and it's going to help us make more stuff in the future.
Yeah. So yes, please support us in the least tacky way possible.
Yes. And do you have anything else you need to talk about?
No, I think that quite wraps it up quite nicely.
All right. Well,
I think you're all ready.
So you should just stay creepy.